board have any questions?
So are these people who may, you're trying, the people who are not clients, are those appointments for assessment purposes?
Yes.
To see how?
Well, and there's ongoing counseling. I mean, there are some, a couple of individuals in the community who have had issues with the law, some to do with predatory behavior, mm-hmm. and we feel, and they do have a, we are sure to see that they do have a developmental disability, but we feel it's a service to the community and to that individual. Mm-hmm. For one, he not get any more trouble,
yeah.
and two, to protect, you know, kids and adults in the community who might be at risk.
Yeah. So are they referred by the legal system to you?
Or by a clinician,
or mm-hmm.
probation officer.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know about that component of your clinical services.
That's a nice example of collaboration between agencies, which is something that we like to see. Any other questions? I'm sorry, Elaine.
No, I was just thanking them. That's all.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Ron. The next application is the Connections Transitional Application, and that is proposing to serve, 75 people during contract year 14, and this includes a lot of different supportive activities and self-advocacy groups and a variety of different activities like that.
I just wanted to speak to this one a little bit.
Just
in reading through the summaries, it appeared that there was a reference to some possible overlap, and this is one of the transitional applications that is referenced in the cover letter. There's lots of activity that happens throughout the agency, not during necessarily the typical day program or other programs that people are participating in. And examples of that include the self-advocacy and some of the one-on-one. A current example with the marathon coming up this weekend is we have 15 people that expressed an interest to participate in the 5K on Friday. And there's some support that is needed in order to do that, whether it's transportation or physical assistance or whatever. So we're excited to be able to do that, but that's, you know, it's outside the parameters of our normal day or our business operations. So there are lots of activities that happen, I wouldn't say across programs, but the staff that have been doing it are across programs. And so what we did is pull all that into one application, mostly to more clearly let you all see what you're paying for and for us to kind of consolidate the effort. So it's, again, not new money, but it's a more comprehensive collective way of describing the activities that are happening above and beyond what typical day program or other programs provide. So Dale referenced earlier that doesn't get billed, that doesn't show up in other programs in terms of what services they're getting. It's in addition to, so it's its own program, and we're going to just kind of create a way to demonstrate that a little more clearly.
As we shift that money out of the proposal I talked about earlier from mm-hmm. the residential component there,
And DTES, because a lot of those activities are people that participate in other programs. So that money is actually pulling from, it's the same resources, but the funding and the activities are just being consolidated, so it's not new money.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the clarification. Does the board have any questions? Okay, the next application is Developmental Training and Employment Services. And this is for primarily unfunded clients, and we're talking about people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and they receive a variety of services, regular work in the provider's business operation, supported employment, And then also developmental training is a third component. So there are really three basic services that are included in this contract.
I'd really like to sort of look at this application and the next one together because, it again, explains.
I can go ahead and explain the next one then if you would like. Yeah. The next one is also developmental training, and this is titled unfunded, it is actually relates to the state limits the amount of billable hours for developmental training. Is it employment too, or just developmental training?
Developmental training. Okay. Well, actually, no, supported employment. That's all together.
Okay.
Anything Medicaid.
1,100 hours a year, and based on people's individual person-centered plans, some people exceed the 1,100 hour cap. And so, what this is, this second proposal is that is to pay for services beyond the 1,100 hour cap that is that the state has set.
Peter, I think I'll just summarize it from a different direction. Basically, in the past, when you started funding this, you fund those consumers in whether it's developmental training, employment services, competitive employment, whatever. You only fund those people that we first can't get eligibility or funding from the state. So you're funding local people. And secondly, when this application, you're paying for those hours in that grant application above the 1,100. In other words, in April, when we no longer get funding for all those consumers, you were picking up that gap. What this application does, again, when you look at making sure, and by the way, we got legal counsel and accounting counsel to make sure everything we were doing was fine. But to be clear, so what you're paying for going forward is we've taken those hours above the 1,100, and the proposal would be is that you'd pay that on a fee-for-service basis. Once that those hours, or we've met those, we would bill you out on an hourly basis on the fee-for-service basis. So it's really the same application, the same service, but it's two different funding methods. So it's really clear to everybody what you're exactly paying for on those hours above and beyond, and it's not just thrown in a bucket.
But and we thank you for those efforts.
Thank you.
Does the board have any questions?
No, that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay. The next program that Developmental Services Center is applying for is the Family Development Center, which is the children's program, and it serves roughly 710 children between the ages of birth to five, who are at risk of a developmental disability or have an intellectual or developmental disability. And the program serves the kids that don't quite meet the state early intervention guidelines in terms of the level of disability, the 30% delay, or it is for activities that the state doesn't include as part of the early intervention program. This is a program we funded for a while. I would also like to mention this is a program that we also have in the contract, the agreement. I think we thank Developmental Services Center. It is they give priority to Access Initiative clients, so and their participants in RAP teams and so forth. So, do you want to add anything to this? Felicia here or some?
Felicia, you can comment if you want to step up in case there's questions, but I just wanted to reference that this one is probably one of the best examples of the state setting a level of disability or at risk that's necessary. And so a child can have needs to have more than a 30% delay in order to qualify. And one of the things that is nice about the CZDDB funding is the fluidity and the continuity of care. You know, if without local funding, those kids would be dropped from services as soon as they hit that 30%, and then they would be without service at all. Typically, then their behavior or their levels or their level of functioning drops, and they come back to the system after there's a gap. So there are a number of children that don't qualify at all for the state, and that's the majority of the funding for CCDDB. I think we only get about $130,000 from the state, so this is predominantly, you know, supported by local dollars, but it also creates the opportunity for those children to receive the same continuity of care, the same service provider, the same person providing therapy services and stuff, regardless of whether or not they fall above or below that the criterion level, which is critical, especially in the 0 to 5 age group.
I think that the other important piece to that is that it's also a supplement to activities and services that the state doesn't even think about paying for. So looking at our child care consultation that is really unique and innovative, and also our play project, which for children who are identified with autism, typically their age is over 3, and the play project is then offered to those families free of service. And that's not something that's typical throughout the nation. So kind of thinking about some of the other innovative programs that are happening with the Family Development Center. Mm-hmm.
Does the board have any questions?
No.
Thank you, Felicia. Thank you, Pat.
Mm-hmm.
Developmental Services Center, Individual Family and Support. And this program proposes to serve 40 children or adults with developmental disabilities. And this really relates to providing support to families in the community, and there's a variety of services that are involved with this. There's also a state program that's funded by the state, but this is an expansion of that program because there's a lot more need than what the state is willing to fund.
And this program was initiated and models the home-based support model, mm-hmm. but it is for individuals that don't qualify or do not receive state funding for those services. So I will defer again.
It's also more flexible than the state's home-based support program in a number of ways. The families can use the money that the state wouldn't allow.
Can you give an example of
that? Let's see. I think paying providers, and I'm not certain, some of these might be fundable, but horseback riding, fees for the Y, for camp, it might, we haven't been successful in getting those funds, but this is something your funding is more flexible in that way to allow that.
Does the board have any questions?
Is that the last of their programs?
Yes.
Across the board, how many clients will you serve?
Oh, about 1,300. And when you look at that number, each program is its own program. So there may be somebody that is receiving. Everybody that's open with the agency has a case manager and receives case management services. Then they also may be enrolled in other programs depending on what their needs are, what their desires are, you know, with the person-centered philosophy that I think is evident throughout all the programs. There is a way for us to meet those needs in various ways, whether that's through day programs, supported employment, respite, which is something that is state-funded, the IFS programs. I think the enrollment is contingent on the services that they are interested in providing. And then there are those that are not consumers of DSC that also are eligible and receive services.
So of the 1,300, some of them will have multiple programs that provide services to them.
And that's also true that there are some that are served by other agencies or other people in this room, that the programs are what is funded and they are participating in those programs.
The other thing, Mike, is numbers are important as far as 1,300 sounds like a lot of numbers. But, for example, children's program, that for one is a person getting a 30-minute screening and everything's fine, but one is also another person getting multiple therapy services from multiple therapists in the same month.
I think apartment services is a good example to also highlight. The 63 doesn't sound like very many, but when you're talking about the level of intensity and the number of doctor's appointments and the surgeries and different issues that, I mean, somebody may receive 5 to 7 hours a week and somebody may be receiving 20. So the one number isn't as identifiable in terms of the level of support, and that's also true in day program. There's many consumers that need one-on-one support or 24-hour supervision or line-of-sight supervision or basic skill needs, with feeding and toileting and things like that. And then there are others that really just need to participate in some activities and are okay in small groups. So I think the numbers can be misleading or don't tell the whole story.
I wanted to add one more comment about the flexibility CCDDB provides the IFS program, and that is it makes it more efficient and effective in that we might have a family who only needs $500 for a summer camp, or then again, we might have a family who has several kids with autism, and we might need to support them in a much larger fashion. So it allows us to not – the state gives you $25,000 as an adult for the year. Your program, we can give $10,000 or $500 or $250, depending on what the family chooses to request. So it's so much more choice-driven and flexible.
Does the board have any other questions?
I'm not quite. In this time of decreasing support from the state, have you had to turn away applicants or clients?
We have a waiting list for many of our programs, Mike, yes. The interesting thing I think that's going to be, you made a comment a couple months ago about the concerns with, and I'm concerned too, but I made the statement about Legis that I'm real excited because it's got the potential for many, many people to get services. And that's true. So here we've got resources, you know, on the local level, property taxes, and they're shrinking there, and it's just the opposite of where we were. The problem, the good news about Legis is it's wonderful that hundreds of people, literally thousands of people, literally over the next 9 years are going to get service, but we just don't know who wins. So to answer your question, we've got some people on the waiting list that if they're lucky, they're going to get pulled, and they're going to get service early, or they could be at the end of that, and we just don't know. Unless they go into an emergency status, then they would get served sooner. So part of this is right-sizing the system. Some people's need that's greater on that list may not get pulled as soon. But the advantage of your funding is when a person that now you're funding does become eligible, we can then shift your funding to a person that's not. That's what's really also cool about Legis is that as a person that we are, if we are providing them service already and they become eligible for the state funding, then we can move your resources to serve that next person that's on the list.
Yeah, the state is creating an opportunity for us to even be responsive to people on the waiting list that can receive local support. So it's, you know, there is some movement on both sides of that regardless of the funding source, you know, pending funding and resources to do that.
Your resource allows more flexibility, and in some cases, to be real honest, we've had a couple people that they're very fortunate they got the home-based program, but actually when they get the award from the state, it's less than the resources that you're giving them now with your funding. But as we shift that, we do that, and so they – actually got a state award, but following, again, the original premise, use the state money first, some of those families then are not going to get as much service. They're not going to, because they're not going to get the same amount, but we are then taking that money and moving it to the next person that's on the list.
In that particular example, is that where the supplementation arises, that if the state steps in and gives you money for that service?
If we would continue to take your money and add it on top of that individual, that could be considered supplementation.
As long as you're doing the same service and not mm-hmm. something different.
But when we get that's where when you do the individual family support stuff, it's more critical. When you folks fund, again, from legal opinion, there's a lot of gray there. When you fund programs, you're not funding individuals other than when you do individual family support. So when you do groups of people in apartments or you do a program, that it's really not, in some people's opinion, supplementation. The changes we've made are ensuring that that doesn't even happen. By, again, the DTES application, we're taking that out of scope, so even if somebody would come in and say, yeah, it's really above 1,100, but it's supposed to cover all, it doesn't. And we've got state also given, you know, that opinion. So to answer your question, again, if you were given $27,000 under a grant for a program right now, and the state comes in and gives them a home base, and I don't know the exact number of these folks, but it's around 25.5. That $1,500 difference we wouldn't get. That person would now get 25.5 worth of service, and
where
we wouldn't give them
27.
And instead of 27.
And you can't give them the 15. The
we will difference. Not do that because we don't want to be in a supplementation type position, and so that makes it more challenging. But believe it or not, isn't that a great issue that we have in Champaign County? Because you've been serving those person in the past, they would have went 7 or 8, 9 years without getting service at all. And the good news is that now the state is taking at least a portion of that responsibility.
Thank you.
Does the board have any other questions about this kind? Okay, good. Okay, let's move on then to another agency. This is persons assuming control over their environment. Incorporated, and we do, okay. And this is the Opportunities for Independence, and this basically is a program that is about helping people move into independence. They PACE is a center for independent living, and that's really what they are about. So would you care to comment on your application?
No, I just thought maybe I'd give a little synopsis of who we are for people who might not know, if that's okay. We're
if you could keep this short, because I think we all know who you are. And,
okay,
we've funded you forever.
I don't have to do it then. Okay. I do like to make the point that we're not just one center, and that we do exist in an independent living movement, and there are hundreds of centers across the nation, 22 in Illinois. And this program, I really think that the program staff could tell you more about the details of that. I think one thing I should mention is that we tend to do the four core services that all centers do, and that would be skills training, advocacy, peer counseling, and information referral. And then additionally, our center has some options for people who might have additional disabilities, such as someone who has DD that also has a vision loss or hearing loss. We have components in our center that are focused on those services. We have a deaf services that is particularly people who sign and who do involve themselves in the deaf community and can help people who maybe are not involved, who are deaf, get in there. And I have seen many people from who have a developmental disability be introduced to the community that way. It tends to make it a lot smoother than just showing up at an event. And we are often mistaken for a physical disabilities. That's who we serve. We serve everyone, every disability, every age. And sometimes it's a referral out for really young. But our interest is in bringing all disability groups together. And this funding that you gave us is an opportunity for us to focus on people with developmental disabilities and yet bring them into the group of all people with disabilities and work with them on issues such as human rights, knowing disability laws. And quite frankly, I have always just loved seeing people with developmental disabilities take to that and want to learn more and more about what their rights are. In fact, the other day, one of our staff was telling me about some medical advocacy that they had been teaching people, how to advocate for themselves with their doctor, how to speak up about what they need and what they have questions about. And that person, who has been functioning pretty much independently, was unaware that he could change doctors because he felt this doctor was not respecting him and was not talking to him. He was talking to the person that went with him. And I just thought it was really cool that he noticed that, and he was asking how he should deal with that. And the staff person was assisting him with that. Do you have anything you want to say? Any questions?
Does the board have any questions? No. Well, we thank you for the work that you do, and as I said, we have been involved with PACE since the inception of the board, and we are glad to have you as partners.
Thank you. We are happy to be here. I also have a letter for you about some concerns about the application that I'll give it to you afterwards.
That would be fine. I've actually been informed of that, and we will do anything we can to make reasonable accommodation related to applications.
Oh, that's something else. This is an error on our application.
Okay. Okay.
To that issue, which was raised with me twice about the accessibility of our online application system, Mark Driscoll has answered it, and I'll email you with what he found.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark, for taking care of that. Okay. The last application is United Cerebral Palsy of Land of Lincoln. And we have some people here. This is an application related to employment, which is, as you know, one of our major areas. And it has to do with vocational training and a curriculum that takes 8 to 10 weeks. It might not be bad, Brenda, since you're here, since the board doesn't know about United Cerebral Palsy, to give them a little bit of an overview, because we don't know you very well.
Several times because of federal cuts, and now the sequester is bumping that back a few weeks, but we anticipate that certainly by the end of May, that contract will start to inform three people in janitorial services. So we're new to the community. We had a very large focus group in the fall, a committee of about 25 people, many people in this room attended, because we just wanted to talk to folks who were in the community, parents, other providers, other professionals in the community, to say, what's going on and what do you see the vision of needs for people with developmental disabilities in this community? And from that, we are working on our strategic plan for the organization that will be finished by June. And then Sue and I are going to host another meeting here in Champaign with the same folks and others who would like to attend that to talk about what that strategic plan now looks like and how we can incorporate the comments that came out of Champaign County into that plan.
You only have another 45 minutes. Does the board have any questions about this application?
I just have one. You have been talking about training people for jobs and then connecting them with those jobs in the community. But on the page, it says, as they complete the discovery program, individuals are referred to DRS for job placement services. So how does
the funding we're asking for is what we're calling our discovery choices.
Just a part of it, what you're talking about. All right.
And this is not funded by anybody else. It's not funded by DD. It's not funded by vocational rehab. It is an exploration process where we really get to know somebody and help them identify, you know, what their interests are, what their abilities are. We piloted this program last year in Springfield. 11 people went through that program in Springfield. 10 of them have jobs. And these are folks with significant developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. And so we think that this is a really good opportunity to spend time getting to know mm-hmm. somebody and what it is they want that will help us then help them find the job that they want. This is not something that Voc Rehab certainly pays for. They mm-hmm. want to say very much going for a place model as quickly as possible in terms of the milestone contract that most contracts in vocational rehab are going to join.
Yeah. Okay. I'm familiar with the discovery. I just wasn't sure exactly what of all you were talking about was what we were being asked to fund.
The other piece is the job fair.
Uh-huh.
And this is something that we've developed to bring to Champaign. This is something we've been participating in Springfield. And we would like to collaborate with all of the agencies. Certainly we'll have, if we're funded, we'd be having a coordinating group that will help deliver that job fair to the community mm-hmm. for people with disabilities to be working with employers and identifying what their needs are and hopefully beginning that job match.
Mm-hmm. And then when you say down here the program performance measures that 75% will attain community employment, that is your estimate of just the job situation plus this training? I mean, I'm thinking so you don't follow those other 25%. They would be.
It's not that we wouldn't follow them.
They I'm asking.
To move out or not to seek a job or have health issues.
Oh, that's what the 25% is. Okay. All right. Thank you.
We'd love to see 100%.
Well, sure. Yeah. Yeah, I just didn't know whether you were identifying some people who just weren't, at the end of the training, who just weren't going to fit in the...
And or they left, but they are not ready to go.
Okay. So the 75% is kind of a guesstimate of what's going to happen at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Does the board have any other questions?
No.
Okay, this concludes our review of the applications, and I will turn it back over to the president. Oh, I was just going to mention something.
Thank you. Any other comments? Barb, you have anything to add to your report on the expo?
And we kind of reversed the order.
the other thing is that there's a stronger emphasis on ability. So you can take some of those if you'd like. And anyway, we're starting to get these out. We have several occasions where we've been able to get these out. It is going to be really important in our move to relocation to make sure folks know where it is and what it is. And,
thank you. Did you want to?
Yeah, I was going to mention something about that. Actually, I was going to talk a little bit about anti-stigma, but I also wanted to comment about how hard that Barb and the committee has been working at this point. Actually, Barb, I was thinking Barb and Nancy are going to go to a Abilities Expo in New Jersey to try to recruit applicants and also see how they do it. And Barb ran into an interesting problem that perhaps PACE could help you with, and that is that they could not find a limousine or a taxi company that would transport them from the airport to the hotel, which I found just incredible. So you may want to consult with maybe you can get some help from PACE because they're good at that. The other thing I wanted to mention was that we just finished the Roger Ebert Film Festival. The film was In the Family. It was well received. We did a panel discussion this year that was moderated by Deborah Townsend, who's from the Mental Health Board, and our own Elaine Palencia was on the panel. And I got to tell you, if you weren't at the panel, Elaine did just a beautiful job. She was eloquent. She went back to Aristotle and carried it forward and tied it all into film. It was a wonderful presentation. So I want to thank you, Elaine, for that excellent work. It was fun and good. So that's it for me.
We got positive feedback about that piece from one of the other panelists who was an Eberfest guest, Sabrina Lee.
Mm-hmm.
One of the film directors. And we also got a lot of positive feedback this year from Eberfest guests and Eberfest patrons about the art show, which was very encouraging. I think people put a lot of time and effort into the art show, and they don't know if it makes an impact, but this year not only did they sell a lot of art, they were recognized, and people actually were looking forward to seeing that again.
I was just going to say one other thing, and there were a number of films, as per usual. Many films that Ebert selected were films that had to do with people with disabilities. And if you haven't seen the movie on Sunday that Sabrina Lee directed, was called Not Yet Begun to Fight, and it was about disabled veterans who had come back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and they used fly fishing as the technique to kind of get them back. It was, but it's a powerful film. And you know, as I said, as usual, I think we really get our bang for the buck out of Ebertfest in terms of getting an anti-stigma message. And film is a wonderful way to have people be able to kind of walk in the shoes of someone that has a disability, or you know, like you were saying, Elaine, that you know the differentness issue, like the barbarians. but anyway, take a look. If you haven't, you know, go on the site and look at the films. There was many good films that have a strong anti-stigma and message.
Could I add one more thing? That this year we had much greater input from the artists and writers than we have. I mean, that wasn't a surprise because we cultivated it, but it was really helpful. And clearly that maybe contributed to the success of the event.
Next meeting is May
22nd.
Yeah. One last thing. I know you all know this, but as we go through the next step of identifying amounts to go with the applications, it's a year we're having to step backwards. We have less money than we had last year. So, see you next month. That's it. We're adjourned.